Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across northern British Columbia. Casting today from the traditional territories of the Kleklaytonay and Tsintsiyan First Nations are your hosts.
I'm Cher Chewy.
And I'm Lee Cameron.
Now, our topic today is rural medicine, and we're continuing our series on quality and healthcare leadership. Today, we're really pleased to have our guest on the show, who is both a practicing rural physician based in Eastern Northern Interior region, but has also been a powerful force for improving rural healthcare services through his leadership of the Rural Coordination Centre of British Columbia, or the RCCBC. We're very pleased to welcome today's special guest, Dr. Ray Markham. And we covered so much good stuff in this interview that we've actually split it into two, and we'll be airing it as two separate episodes. So welcome, Ray. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's an honor to be here.
So first of all, I wonder if you can start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you grew up, and what your journey looked like from medical school to your current practice in Northern BC.
Sure. So I was born in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, so Southern Africa, in Matabele land, so the land of the Matabele people. It was called a different name at that stage of the country. My kind of heritage is kind of mixed Eastern, Western European, a little bit of Middle Eastern kind of in the mix there. Kind of people, Russians in Africa. I grew up in Zimbabwe, a little town called Masvingo in Bulawayo, and then went to medical school in Cape Town, where I studied there, worked a little bit in Eisner, and then moved over to Newfoundland. So we spent 3 years working in Newfoundland on the south coast in a little village called Harbour Bay, and really loved our time there. Didn't have a clue getting a full license in Canada at that stage. And so to the UK, I joined the British Army, spent 6 years in the British Army, doing my GP training. So I did the MRC GP, all the British kind of licensing exams and training. And then that was the path to get into doing LMCC. While I was with the Army, and then spent an additional year up in Edinburgh as a civilian working for the Army, just setting up a sports medicine rehab unit for Tudor, which was at that time the Scottish area. So just setting up a rehab unit for the soldiers there. And then moved to about just over 22 years ago now to Valmont. Completed all the Canadian things, well, mostly before I got back here. And I've been living and working in the village of Valmont, which is on Kleklaytonay and some territory, for the last 22 plus years. Married to Alison for 33 years now. We have two girls, Rachel and Alexandra. Rachel's just finishing grade 12. And Alex is in her second year of university at UBC.
Well, that's quite the journey, actually. You've taken in a number of countries, many different spots, and lots of different disciplines in there as well.
So I haven't even told you the spots we went to when I was in the British Army. So that's probably another podcast.
That could be another podcast. That sounds like I'll hold you to that, Ray.
You've got healthcare in the Antarctic, if you like.
And it's interesting, and it's lovely to hear the name of the town of Knysna come up there. I've actually been to Knysna. I've been there. I passed through there on my way to Cape Town once on an elective. They have a very famous steam train there, I think, in Knysna.
Yep, and they have a really famous blowhole there as well, where the ocean comes in and vents up. So yeah, it's a beautiful little town if anyone gets a chance to go there, for sure.
Excellent. Well, let's get back to the interview, shall we? So tell us a little bit about your current medical practice, about the community of Valmont, which is where you're currently based. What's it like to live there, and who's on your team?
Well, I mean, I think Valmont's the best place in the world to live. I think it's an amazing community. It's a little village technically of 1,100 people by census. The Robson Valley, which is kind of where we are, kind of is our catchment area, if you like, goes from... Our catchment area will sit pretty much from Crescent Spur to the Alberta border, and then down south to as far down as Blue River, about 5,000 or 6,000 people. And there are two communities there, Bride and Valmont. So we have a small diagnostic and treatment center in Valmont, which is basically runs a 24/7 eMERGE with a nurse on call after hours, physician on call after hours. And then it's a small hospital in McBride, which again runs a 24/7 eMERGE. with a nurse in community, in the hospital, and then a doctor on call, and lab and x-ray is also on call in both communities when we're on call. We do share after-hours call with McBride. We've done that. For the first six months when I was here, we were each doing our own call, but there were two of us in each community. And at that stage, the ministry decided, and the government, and I think our authority, that a one-in-two call was not sustainable, and I think appropriately so. And so kind of merged the call route here. So we share after all between the two communities, where we will cover the one community virtually, and kind of patients will move if they need to move for care. We have in Valmont, what's amazing, one of the best advantages I think that we have in our community is that we're all co-located in the same building. So that really helps us with kind of communication, which I think is super important in kind of doing anything and trying to improve health services. It's a natural advantage, I think, that we have. The team members that we have vary from time to, you know, there'll be times when we have a physiotherapist and when we don't. We have a number of PCAs who kind of really, I would say, are the spinal column of our clinic, if you like. They really keep things going. All our diagnostics, so lab and x-rays are in the same building, so they'll support that as well as eMERGE, as well as if we have a counselor, public health nurse when we had public health, or certainly our vaccination clinics, all of those things are supported through our PCAs. And then you do have a physio who visits a few days a week.
And the nearest large town, Ray, to Valmont and McBride?
So it depends how you mean large town. So the nearest, our two main referral centers will be Kamloops, which is about 3.5 hours, so 330 km from Valmont, and Prince George is about 300 miles. Hinton, so some of our maternity patients will go to Hinton, which is in Alberta. So across the border, we're about 80 or so k's from the Alberta border. And so for maternity, some moms will go in Hinton, and they do have a surgical service, which is sometimes they'll accept patients from BC. And so we will send those patients over there sometimes. They also have a CT and an MRI during daytime hours. No, the MRIs are visiting MRI. So we'll sometimes refer across to for those diagnostic imaging and that kind of stuff. But the nearest kind of place, if we're going to routinely send somebody for a consult or anything like that, nearest specialist will be in Sydney, BC, is about 3 hours away.
Oh, okay.
On good roads in the summer, as you know.
Always the challenge. Okay.
Yeah, on good roads in the summer. Doesn't that sum up some of our rural and remote communities? So what's it like to practice in a rural community such as Valmont? And with that, what are the main challenges you see to providing quality care?
Our practice is, we kind of really do full service general practice. So we kind of do everything that's needed for the community. A generous practice, I would say, and the best definition that I've actually seen of generous practice really is made of three components. It's scope of practice, so what you're allowed to do kind of as a professional. And often people talk about that as being at the top of scope, but I actually think there are a lot of times when you have to be doing things that are not even seen as in scope. So there are times when I think in a team that as a doctor I'll be making a bed or something like that. So that's that idea of scope of practice is not just keeping people at the top, but really seeing the second point is in the patient needs. So what's needed to actually serve our community and serve our patients. And then the third point is the team that you have around you. So kind of you flex and move into kind of the spaces in order patients need, depending on who you have around you and what your skills are. And so that's the type of practice that we do. It's very rewarding. I mean, I really moved to Valmont because I was wanting to deliver the babies of the babies I delivered. So that kind of idea of that longitudinal care and that relationship with community. Valmont's been a very special community.
What's the flip side? So what are the benefits? And you've mentioned some of those, and then benefits to yourself and benefits to your patients. So other benefits that you can that come to mind when you think about practicing in rural Valmont?
So as I was saying, the longitudinality, I think, is super, super important, and the relationship with community is super important. And our community has been very generous with that. The other kind of pieces are kind of there's living life in rural, which, so we were talking about the roads earlier. So I was given advice early on in Newfoundland, actually, where when I moved there, I think they'd had 20 docks moving through in 3 years, and all of them had been in an accident. And the doc who kind of was chief of staff at the time said to me two things. He said, studded tires, and if the locals aren't driving, don't drive. So those kind of things, the relationship with community and understanding kind of how life is lived from the people who actually live in community is super important. So getting into kind of the things that are available for you to do in that community actually really are a big gift. The for clinical practice, I think the longitudinality really helps with providing care. It makes you more efficient if you know people, because you actually have a story and an idea of the backstory. You also have an idea of social support, social environment, all of those kind of things. The fact that we are kind of forced to work in a team, really, because we do the best that we have with what best we can with what we have. That's kind of always kind of been the approach, not because I think we're intentionally trying to do that, but that's because the necessity of doing things. And I think that's actually really a good way to think about practicing medicine. And one of the advantages of kind of being in a small town is you're really faced with, you're face to face with this idea of what does a patient need and what can I do? I may not be able to do X, Y, and Z, but I can do certain things. So what can I do? So that's that kind of approach of moving things incrementally for our patients and for the team.
Okay, so you mentioned some of the challenges that come with rural practice, and particularly some of those in locally you have in Velma. And you've done a lot of innovative work in overcoming these challenges. I wonder whether you could tell us about some of the things that you've done and developed there.
Yeah, sure, Sean. So first thing I would say is I think the things that we have done as a team, so I really don't want to take credit for them. I obviously have a role as a leader in our community in kind of supporting and driving these things forward. But, you know, I would say underlying everything is this idea of investing in culture. So kind of the connection with people as a team and our kind of respect for each other and our kind of alignment in purpose and willingness to work on. And so creating and holding spaces where that can be articulated and explored has been probably a key piece of what we do. And so those are things that actually often aren't necessarily seen as clinical activities. But, you know, kind of the social kind of club things. One of the things that we do as physicians is we pool the money that we get for teaching and for chronic disease management. And then we kind of use that to support activities within the clinic. So we have, for instance, we have this competition that kind of keeps running called the Gold Duck competition. So basically it's for Valmont's best guesser. So we will have guessing competitions on, you know, when a baby's due or, you know, when the snow is going to disappear off the tennis court, those kind of things. And it's not a golden duck. It's actually a little brass, one of these cheap brass ducks that I found at Value Village. But that kind of thing. So we also will do a staff retreat where we kind of do some team building activities once a year where we use that fund, that doctor's fund, kind of to support those activities. So I think that's kind of a foundational piece where people actually see, connect, understand, see each other as human beings, and then kind of connect around our common purpose. We've been involved with IHI for quite a long time and really stolen a bunch of, we've adopted initiatives from IHI, including like a morning huddle. We've been doing that for, I would say, almost 20 years now. Every morning, everybody in the building gets together for like literally 10 minutes. And we'll just talk through the day. So what's going on? Who's in the building? Who might be coming in? You know, if somebody is coming in for a depot injection, but they may not be consistently coming in, making sure that there's somebody to kind of find them and kind of get them into the community, those kind of things. So that's every day we do that. I'll warn you, if you do come to Valmont on Fridays, we do Friday morning push-ups. So we started at 22, I think, probably 15 years ago. And we're now up to 26 push-ups on Friday morning. But if you don't like push-ups, you can plank or push up against the wall or whatever. But kind of that's just another way to look at connecting people. Clinically, we did a lot of work around dropping group medical appointments, stigmas. Including undifferentiated drop-in group medical appointments and differentiated kind of focused drop-in group medical appointments, including actually working on some of our prenatal stuff. And that has worked very well for us. It obviously went completely pear-shaped during COVID. We're kind of looking at starting to rebuild that. We've had a lot of turnover on nursing staff as well. So those kind of appointments were usually co-hosted with a physician, a nurse, and a PCA. A very efficient use of time, as I think you're familiar with Digmas. We identified pretty early on 20 or so chronic diseases that we felt were important to be actively and proactively managing. And so we developed registry. So we were one of the first clinics, I think, in the north on MOAS, because we kind of felt the need to keep track of our chronic disease management proactively. And so using our health data in the practice, firstly, to identify kind of panels of patients with whether seronegative arthropathies to the usual diabetes or whatever. We get together once a month as a team and identify kind of what areas we're going to be focusing on. But we also have a schedule throughout the year where January would be like diabetes month and February will be like hypertension month, where we're actually systematizing kind of our chronic disease management. One of the things I found when PSP was doing these chronic disease sessions that we've attended a whole lot of them, super interesting, super helpful sessions, but it kind of started feeling a little bit like whack-a-mole, where kind of everyone is looking at diabetes or hypertension or chronic kidney disease, and anybody, if you pick one, you can actually just knock it out the park where you're kind of getting whatever the metrics are. But when you start hitting 3, 4, or 5 of those things, it starts becoming very difficult to keep all the balls in the air. So we really, as a team over the years, have tried to think about how do we systematize that? So how do we kind of just routinize over the year, kind of how we are kind of prioritizing certain areas that we're wanting to be more proactive with? And then if and when we have capacity, because that's obviously the other thing, I think everywhere feels this, but particularly in rural and particularly in small rural, where you have staff shortages and a lot of fluctuation, turnover, sometimes you're just doing the best you can to keep your head above water. And at that stage, you're just putting out fires and that's okay. And then at times when you have kind of the appropriate amount of staff, then you can actually put energy and attention into some of the more proactive upstream stuff. And so we have tried out to kind of systematize and routinize those things.
Okay. I wonder if I could just delve a little bit in a little bit more detail, just a couple of those, because you're doing a lot of stuff, which is sounds really great. Just go back to the morning huddles and the whole team getting together. So this is not something that maybe a lot of other practices will do. What do you see as the main benefits that you as a practice get out of that morning huddle?
So I think the main benefit is actually a connection piece. Is actually realizing, even though somebody may be in an office downstairs, that they're a part of the team. So including kind of the janitorial staff. So everybody, literally everybody in the team and everyone in the building is there. And they all have a role. And if they're not doing kind of their role, then the team doesn't work as well. So but there's a validation process to that. There's also kind of this piece around seeing who's in the building. That's also often helpful because sometimes I need to speak to Vicky, who's the HSA, and is she here today or not? And I'll spend 5 minutes trying to wander around the building, see if she's there or not. If I know she's there, then I know she's there. And so that's super important. I think there's that, I would say, that symbolic kind of connection underlying piece. And then there's just some very pragmatic pieces around, we have this patient coming in who may need kind of these supports, or this person maybe shouldn't be in the waiting room for very long or whatever. So whatever, they need to be put in this room. Or as I say, somebody is not consistent with coming in, it's important that they get in for this appointment. So let's get the life skills worker to go and find them and kind of bring them in. So those pragmatic things of just making the day run a little bit smoother. Or it might be, hey, you know, we don't have the right number of PCAs running the clinic today. So we kind of just need to take it easy on or expect that things won't be as efficient from that perspective. So understanding where everybody else is kind of with workload, understanding kind of what the patient needs are, and then kind of just as a team kind of figuring out what the pace and the balance is going to be like during that day.
Sure. And then the other one I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into is you talked about using your MoES, which is your electronic medical record, and leveraging that to get ahead, if you like, to proactively seek out some of the ways you can improve, particularly the patients with chronic diseases. How do you actually do that? How do you actually interrogate that your EMR, get that data, and then turn that into an actionable process?
So there's kind of big. So the first piece is garbage in, garbage out. So coding is super important and pretty boring and difficult for people. So pretty early on, one of the reasons that we identified these 20 kind of chronic diseases or conditions that we wanted to keep track of is we wanted to be consistent so that everybody knew how to code that in, because you could code seronegative arthropathies as a ankylosing spondylitis or whatever, and it may never, you may never be able to. So we kind of agreed as a team that this is the way we were going to code all of these things. So that's the first piece. MoES, so as an example for MoES, it has the dashboard that you can print out. So basically what that does is it's looking at a whole bunch of validated chronic disease stuff as well as preventive stuff and kind of scores you. So that's one of the things we look at our chronic disease meeting every month will be to look at that and to see where we are. We keep track on whether things are moving up or moving down. Then also to identify kind of where our next kind of area of focus for the next month might be. So maybe on where we maybe could be doing better, like for instance, recording smoking habits or whatever, or maybe there's a drive on a certain kind of activity. And so that might be the area of focus that we look at and we see where our baseline is and what we might do to kind of shift things. And then, as I say, for the kind of more regular stuff, we kind of really try and review kind of flow sheets and kind of appropriate kind of treatment management for things like diabetes and whatever. And then we'll have a systematic recall process for that. So that involves running a report. And I must say, and I don't think it's going to be a surprise to everybody, we used to have a lot of autonomy and agency within the EMR ourselves that has been kind of clamped down a lot. So we're actually way less flexible than we were 5 or 10 years ago in our ability to do that.
That's really helpful. Thank you, Ray. Now, to some of our listeners who might live and work in more urban settings, some of the things they're hearing about the rural practice may be new to them. What are some of the common misconceptions that maybe urban physicians might have about rural practice? And man, what would you like them to know about rural practice?
There's a bit of a perception that I think it was in Star Trek, kind of that idea of a country doc. Oh, I'm just a country doc. You know, that kind of idea. And I think that's fundamentally a lot of the time what rural docs will see themselves as. And, you know, I think this is about generalism generally and family medicine kind of generally as well. I think it's just more obvious and more present in a rural context is that idea to every day have an totally undifferentiated patient walking in the door repeatedly. And you then having to figure out a path forward is a skill set and an expertise in and of itself. And so, and it's immensely rewarding. I only figured out actually a few years ago that one of the things that really floats my boat is problem solving. And if you fundamentally look at kind of the heart of what rural practice is it about problem solving. And so for sure, family medicine is really about aligning and allying with a patient around a challenge or something that they're looking at, and then figuring out how you're going to navigate it. And there's clinical diagnostic problem solving, but there's also all of the other problem solving pieces that are much more in your face in a rural community than they would be in an urban community. Like, for instance, do I order a CT scan where actually somebody may die on the road? I've had one patient and one family member die going for routine diagnostics. So you have to factor those things into kind of your decision-making process and then share those decision-making with the patient and then kind of, and then revisit that as it goes. And so I think that's an immensely challenging, certainly would be very difficult to be bored in kind of this kind of environment. And then the opportunity to work in a team and to look at the needs of the community and then kind of explore areas of interest is another thing that I think is really an amazing opportunity in rural. I think it's there in family medicine as a general practitioner in urban as well. But kind of the area of if you like anesthetics to actually do anesthetics, or if you like surgery to do surgery, or if you like eMERGE to do eMERGE, or if you like long-term care to do long-term care, if you like chronic pain management to do that, or oncology or kind of palliative care, you know, all of these things are, and the ability to move in and out of those things is an amazing gift, I think, that we have. And it's an amazing profession that we have. And it's been an amazing journey for me anyway.
Thank you. That's great insights there.
Ray, you've been a powerhouse in both advocating for rural practice and practitioners and developing innovative ways of improving the quality of care you provide. What's been your underlying driving motivation throughout this journey?
Yeah, it's kind of in a lot of ways a very big question, and kind of often a motherhood and apple pie leads itself to motherhood enough. But, you know, for me personally, I just believe that every single human being has infinite and kind of huge and equal value. And kind of for me, a lot of that's based in my faith. And so the opportunity to look at kind of the people that we're serving and kind of see where they are and meet their needs is really for me a fundamental kind of reason why and a driver. So it's a driver of, I think, me being a clinician. I think for a lot of people, they want to help people fundamentally. And then also it's been a driver for me to explore in our community and in other roles is kind of some of the larger pieces. So for instance, quality work is all about that, is about actually how do we kind of look at getting better at kind of using the resources that we have to serve our patients more, which is what they deserve. So that's the fundamental driver. And, you know, and then you even at a kind of local or regional level hit barriers or kind of ways that things could be done that would be different and affect patient care. And so for me, everything I do, the touchstone is this going to make a difference to our patients in Belmont? So that's fundamentally kind of what it is, and make a difference in a positive way, obviously. So that's kind of underlying everything. And I think that's also the touchstone. You know, sometimes like any team, we lose our way a little bit, and kind of always coming back to, you know, what does this mean for our patients? What does this mean for the community? What does this mean for the people that we're serving? And is this actually going to result in better service for them, or is this going to result in kind of worse service? And if it's resulting in worse service, we shouldn't do it. If it's resulting in better service, we should be looking at it. So.
Thank you for that. That's that clarity of having that North Star is all important, isn't it? So thank you for that insight. So we're going to take a break here, and we'll be returning with the second half of the interview with Dr. Ray Markham, when we switch gears and talk about his work improving rural healthcare on the larger provincial scale through the Rural Coordination Centre of BC. If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our other episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts, and subscribe to our channel. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for us about healthcare quality improvement, email us at qualitycons@northernhealth.ca, and your question could feature on a future episode. QualityCast North is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program of the Specialist Services Committee, a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation for the provincial health authorities. This episode was co-produced by Dr. Sher Chewy and Lee Cameron, with technical support from Levi Giles and Matt Walker of Expression North. Original music by Daniel Chewy. Further information about today's guest is available in our show notes on our website at nhpqi.ca.